Hello, Audio Journal listeners. In place of our regularly scheduled programming, we bring you the following program brought to you by Audio Journal.
Hello and welcome to Beautiful Minds, an exploration into the minds of creative people and what makes them tick. This show is brought to you by Audio Journal and sponsored by the Memorial Foundation for the Blind. Opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the views and opinions of Audio Journal, its board of directors, staff, or volunteer readers. The goal of this program is to offer insight into the beautiful and creative minds of all types of artistic people right here in the New England area. I'm your host, Tom Hurley, and my guest today is Oscar Balza. Oscar is a Berkeley-educated musician and longtime friend, and I can't wait for you to get to know him.
All right. Whenever you're ready.
Cool.
Are we recording already?
We are recording right now.
All right. My name is Pablo Escobar.
Okay. Let's begin.
Mm-hmm.
Oscar Balza,
mm-hmm.
Old friend. Drummer extraordinaire, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
If you want to take a moment and introduce yourself in your own special way to the listeners, you may do that now.
Well, like you said, my name is Oscar Balza, and I'm a drummer, and we've been friends for way over 20 years now. That's all I can say.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that's been a great interview. Thank you so much.
It's been great, right? Went by so fast.
Yeah, it's like it didn't even happen.
Yeah.
So I'd like to begin by talking to you about your background, your where you came from.
Red.
Yeah, the background right behind you is bright red. Thank you for pointing. Mine is as well.
So we have things that, you know, we're very similar.
Yeah. I'm going to just ask you to go ahead and kind of tell me your life story. So,
okay.
Yeah.
Well, I was born in South America, in Venezuela specifically. Well, more specifically in Maracaibo, which is the city where the oil used to come from when we had the tools. Mm-hmm. The government destroyed all that, so there's a lot of oil, but no tools. So anyways, well, a different type of tool. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
I was born there, and it was in 1980 that I discovered music, that it hit me.
And how old were you in 1980?
Five. Yeah. It was Kiss, American band.
Sure, yeah.
You've heard of them. Some people have.
Vaguely familiar with Kiss, yeah.
I mean, I thank God I vividly remember that moment. Every time I remember it, I get goosebumps because it was so monumental for me.
Wow. Can you tell me about that moment?
There was a neighbor whose family was American because of the oil company. Mm-hmm. So he would come to America very often, and he would get all this bunch of music. I mean, great bunch of albums. He's just, it was beautiful. That room was, you know, you would see posters like Ozzy and Journey and the bands that were happening at the time.
Sure.
So I see Kiss, and it was Harder Than Hell, their second album. My uncle talks to the guy saying, can we take it just to listen to it?
Mm-hmm.
So we did, and we went to her apartment, and we played it, and I remember I sat in front of the speakers, you know, the long, tall speakers. That
sure.
Were, yeah.
Yeah.
And the song is Got to Choose. That's it, the song that opens the album. I'm like, wow, what is this?
Hmm.
Then I hear the drums coming in, and I'm like, can't describe what it felt like, but it was like, this is me.
Mm-hmm.
This is, if individuality or Oscar had a sound, is this.
Interesting. I've never heard it described in that way before, but that's, I like that.
Oh, yeah. Dude, it was.
That's cool.
Unforgettable. And Kiss to this day is just, you know, I thank them a lot because they showed me this beautiful country because I didn't know, first of all, I didn't know they were real.
Mm.
Because, you know, you see the picture and you think they're, you know, you see them in magazines, TV, recorded stuff, mm-hmm. and album covers. So it's like, you don't know if they're real. You don't know if they have families. You don't know if they are from Earth. You don't know anything. You know, you're five and you start creating all this bunch of stories in your head.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would go to school, I remember, and I would be at every class, either drawing the KISS logo or just singing the songs in my head, and the teacher would be explaining, I don't know, math.
Yeah.
And I'm like, who cares, man? I mean, I just found the answer.
Yeah.
So that's what got me into music, because I kept getting more and more bands. Say KISS was probably the first one, and then after that, it was Van Halen, Rush, Queen, The Who, and I know that you're a fan.
I am, yeah.
I only had, at the moment, one album. It was a soundtrack to a movie, and it wasn't Tommy.
Oh,
it wasn't Quadrophenia. It was Mac Vicar.
Oh, Mick Vicar.
Mick Vicar.
Yeah,
okay.
That was a Roger Daltrey solo album.
Okay, it
actually.
Was all like silver,
yep.
shiny silver,
mm-hmm.
and
yep.
it didn't grab me like the other ones, but, you know, of course, once you go to Tommy, Quadrophenia,
yeah.
and then you realize where everything came from.
Right.
But it was the only thing we had,
mm-hmm.
it was the only album I had by them, or by Daltrey. And I remember seeing the little WHO, something like singer. I wouldn't remember right now if it said singer from The Who or The Who. And I'm like, okay. And then the same neighbor would bring beta tapes. Remember those?
Yeah, I do.
With MTV and all that. So I'm like seeing Bon Jovi, way before they were big. We're talking about 84, 83. Mm-hmm. And then you finally see KISS moving, and you go like, oh, they're actors. They must be actors. They're so perfect. It's just, you know? And then you see some guy speaking in English, blah, 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 Van Halen, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, why don't I see this in national TV in South America? Well, they're not from here. They're from the United States. And I'm like, I have to go there. And then I would see cartoons and stuff, and I'm like, Dad, why don't we make our own cartoons here in this country?
Mm-hmm.
Well, no, it's only in, you know, they're imported. They bring it from the United States. And I'm like, that's got to be a hell of a country, you know, because
they
the entertainment.
They make rock and roll and cartoons.
And cartoons and
what
Star Wars.
What a better country could you live
and
in?
And Star Wars. And you go like, wow, you know?
Yeah.
And then the toys. You know,
sure.
got the Star Wars, and I'm like, yeah, this is it. And, you know, when you're five, you don't know what adults are going through.
Mm.
You would see certain things around the house that would happen that you don't understand. Some were pretty scary. And that's when KISS and Alice Cooper and Bowie would do their part. I would just hide under the bed with the Walkman.
Wow.
And just go somewhere else. It was escape, and again, it was me. It's like, you're safe right now. You're a rock and roller.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's kind of like what I can remember from those years. My mom and dad were divorced,
mm-hmm.
and I would have to travel from my dad's house to another city, take a plane to my mom's city, and it was a hassle. I remember being that young, still going like, why does it have to be this way when your friends, you know, their parents are together and,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, so. And then you're going to school and you have trouble focusing because you're thinking about what you saw the night before and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Little did I know that, you know, dad had his issues and all that. So anyways, I mean, the music was a channel to forget.
Sure.
Or to get through those times that eventually would come back.
Mm-hmm.
But after all these years, I can tell you that if it wasn't for music, probably I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
And then you decide to take this road of music and you want to do it to the standards you grew up with. not the local music,
mm-hmm.
the Kiss, the Van Halens, which is kick-ass, well done, well performed, you see that no bands in the country sounded like that. And you go like, okay, I want to make my own band and I want to just go and do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
But the rock industry back then down there it's never been an industry like here.
Yeah.
You know? So that was another reason to pick the United States. It's like, okay, you have Star Wars, you have Kiss, mm-hmm. you have cartoons, you have Milky Way, yeah. you have, you know,
the chocolate bar,
yeah. Twix and all that. You yeah. have, you know, Circus Magazine and Ret Magazine and all that.
Mad Magazine,
Garbage Pail Kids.
Yeah.
And you go like, yeah, I have to go there. Mm-hmm. So I worked my ass off to learn the language to an extent I could back then. You know, I still get my brain farts and stuff, and I apologize for using those descriptive words, but that's the only, you know, even though I'm not thinking right now in Spanish or English, I sometimes, you know, it's probably the ADD or something. I don't know. But anyways, I got my hands on albums with a lyric sheet. So I would go with a dictionary, Spanish, English, / English, Spanish, and go like, okay, this is what it means. And then the verbs and the sentences are, the setting is different because sometimes you put the verb before,
mm-hmm.
you know, so the blue car in Spanish would be the car blue. So at times it wouldn't make sense, but eventually it worked its way out and it made sense to the point that I'm talking to you and you American can understand what I'm saying.
I have to interrupt you. That's fascinating because I didn't know this about you until just now that this is the way that you learned how to speak English. And
it was listening to Paul Stanley from
Kiss.
Yeah,
that's amazing to me because, you know, rock and roll pop music lyrics are, if they're well written, they're quite poetic.
Mm-hmm.
They're very oftentimes metaphorical.
Mm-hmm.
So you're reading things at a very young age in another language,
mm-hmm.
translating them. We as American consumers of this music, lots of times you listen to, you know, a song and you're like, what's this song about? What's it mm-hmm. mean? What you know what I mean when I say that? So that's like such a deeper layer because you're learning the language from a story that may be very cryptic, you know, from the author of, you know, the
yeah.
lyricist, you know. So anyway, I'm sorry to interrupt.
No, it's fine. Please just feel to, you know, whenever you want to talk, go for it. But let me tell you, I mean, when you say poetic, yes, that I remember a line by Kiss that put your hand in my pocket, grab onto my rocket.
it's poetry.
Poetry, right? And I'm like, okay. I mean, it's cool, and I would go like, yeah. I actually didn't know what he was talking about.
That's sort of my point.
Know,
yeah.
Eventually, I would. Okay.
Yeah.
I got it.
Yeah.
You know. But yeah, it was that because I knew that if I wanted to come here, I needed to learn the language to the point of, even though when I returned back in 2006, and you remember that time,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I recovered the accent I thought I didn't have before 2006. So right now it's like I'm more conscious about how to pronounce something because I think I lost a little bit of the American mojo I had before I moved back. So anyways, I then started to, you know, I learned how to read music and...
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
How old are you when you tell mom or dad or both of them in one way or another that, you know, I want... what was the first instrument? Was it a guitar?
I wanted to be a guitarist.
Yeah.
Because of Eddie Van Halen.
Mm-hmm. Who, ironically, or I don't know if ironically is the right word, but he was originally a drummer.
Correct.
Yeah.
And his brother, who's a huge influence, was a guitarist.
I never knew that till recently.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And somehow I knew that I was left-handed when I was, like, probably at five, I was left-handed. Then I went to kindergarten in Venezuela, and they changed me to right-handed.
Hmm.
So when I would play tennis, I would go left-handed, and they would say, you're doing it wrong.
Hmm.
When I play guitar, I would go left-handed, and I still do. play like air guitar left-handed.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's this way, sorry. This is the way I kind of feel it, because the dexterity I have in my right hand is way more developed than for guitar than mm-hmm. my left. So I go like, how can you do the solos like Eddie that fast with this hand, the left hand? No, it works better if I go like this,
mm-hmm.
you know? So it's a constant brain fart. That's what I have. But I realized that guitar wasn't going to do it. And then we go back to Kiss. I saw Peter Criss at live video in Tokyo. And I'm like, no, this is more me. I mean, I feel like the beat, the strength, or the intensity of drums is a good way to represent what I feel. And I don't know what I feel, but if it had a sound, it would be drums. I was 6, 7 at this point.
So 6, 7 years old, you've already tried out the guitar.
Oh, yeah.
And you're able to play it.
But a little, but it wasn't, I wasn't,
yeah.
I felt like, no, it's not, yes, I love it, but it's not me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a frustrated guitarist. Yeah. I do know my chords and all that, but.
Yeah, I am too, by the way.
Well, no, but I've seen you play, so it's, you well, know. But yeah. Again, when you have Eddie Van Halen as the one you want to sound like, you go like, forget it. No, it ain't happening. So
you get into the drums, and you're 6 or 7 years old.
When my 10 was my first show.
Really?
I was 10.
So,
yeah.
6 or 7, you get a drum set almost right away?
No. I actually played with shoe boxes on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And this is funny, because I was talking to somebody not long ago that I thought that the bass room in a drum set was mm-hmm. only to support the drums on it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, because if you had the space there, they would see your feet, and it would be weird. So they needed to fill that space with some. It wasn't until I sat on a real drum set that I see the pedals, and I'm mm-hmm. I go like, uh-oh. What do you do with this now?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. So I auditioned for the school band, and I didn't get the job. Dude, I felt, like, humiliated, you know?
How old are you then?
10.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then I went home knowing that there's pedals in a drum set. I would play Can of Magic by Queen, and I would play the album, and I would play 1984 by Halen. And, for example, Hot for Teacher starts with...
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, this sounds like that big drum with the bass, with a pedal.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I started just knowing the difference between how a snare sounds... versus a tom versus a bass drum. That's how it started. And then the rest was like, okay, so you listening to Rush, for example, Tom Sawyer, you would know like, doom, da, boom, da. And of course, it would sound like all, you know, you would be, you know, like pretty clumsy, pretty bad. But somehow you knew what sounded like what. And eventually by... 2 years later, I formed my band called DDT because I felt like it sounded like AC/DC or TNT or some dangerous, but DDT apparently is an insecticide.
It's pretty dangerous.
Yeah, but not to the explosive, you know, it's like, it sounds horrible.
Yeah.
But anyways, and we had a few shows and things were picking up, and then that's when I met one of my musical soulmates, Leo, who's the singer of my band right now, currently.
Okay. Right on.
We're talking about, what, 88 at this point? Through Kiss, actually.
You're still in Venezuela.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And still translating lyrics and still translating Circus magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Not getting slangs. I remember that. This is losing me. What are they talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty cool. All right. Cool is temperature. It's like comes from cold. But why are they using this song? Sounds very cool. Sounds very cold. Well, I mean, yeah, whatever. You know, I wouldn't
get
that part. I got when I came here.
Right.
All the slangs and all the stuff. So then Leo and I had a band called Passion after that. And we opened for, you know, at this point, you're what, 13? And you're opening for Menudo and big acts down there in front of 20,000 people. And you think life is going to be like that.
You're 13,
forever.
Though.
You're 13.
You're in front of 20,000 people.
Yes. And it was like, this is what I know how to do. This is what I wanted. And, you know, it's like, put one person in the audience or put 20,000, 30,000. What we rehearsed is what goes. So nothing is going to go wrong. So I got somehow I got that mentality already at that point. Then we broke up. Leo came to Berkeley, and we kind of had like a, not a very formal agreement, but you know, when you're a kid, you say, I'm going to take on the world, and you believe it. So I said, you know, we're going to be the Latin Bon Jovi. We definitely need to stay together, and we need to, you know. So he came to Berkeley, and then I didn't have the money to do the Berkeley thing. So I was like, all right, let's try for a scholarship. And it happened.
Wow.
And that's how I came here in 95. Okay. So that's when I started applying what I learned from grab onto my rocket and the cool and all the slangs and all the thing. And here we are. That's pretty much a resume, very resume.
Yeah. And you're living in the greatest city in the world, Boston.
I love Boston. So in when we met was 2004 or three around that time.
Yeah.
We were doing the Longview thing and I was still under an artist visa, the 01 visa. And, you know, visas expire. So the reason why I had to leave is because, you know, nothing happened with Longview. Nothing happened with the other band I had that we were close to getting a record deal and all that. I had to go back.
Now,
so
when you say Longview, just so people understand, you're talking about Longview Farm.
The studio, the recording studio. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you go back and, you know, you've been away since 1995 and you go back in 2006. So pretty much there's been a lot of change. The thing is that this is probably going to be a ADD story, you know, like Pulp Fiction type of thing. In 92, there was a guy named Hugo Chavez who tried to attempt against the government. Doesn't matter what other people tell you or whoever's listening to this. He tried to kill the president in turn. Carlos Andres Perez was his name. He was like a Fidel Castro Che wannabe. Doesn't matter what people say that he was a, you know, or he's going to liberate this, you know, we're going to be free thanks to Che. No, BS. You know, lefties are come selling you beautiful things and then look at where Venezuela is now, today. So anyways, so in 92, he does this. He gets caught. He goes to jail. By the time I leave in 95, he's still in jail. In 98, I'm here. He runs for presidency. And I'm still ignorant in terms of politics. I never paid attention to it until the whole Bush Jr., you know, when he ran, you know, against, is it Dole?
You know, I'm not sure. No, because Bush was a Republican. So, yeah, maybe Al Gore.
Al Gore.
Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
I started paying attention to that for some reason. I don't know why. Yeah. Anyways, so in 98, Chavez is released from jail. I would have thought that he would just live on a normal life and just, all right, I did what I did and I paid, you know, I did what I had to do in jail and come out and I'm just going to get my own business. Well, his own business was run for presidency democratically. And I remember thinking, if he wins, we'll never, ever get rid of him.
Really? You thought that?
Oh, back then I was like, I'm very ignorant in terms of politics, but I got the feeling that if he wins, this is it. Well, look at where we are. So anyways, so 1995, put 10 years, and then you haven't been living in Venezuela for 10 years. You come back in 2006, and you find a different country, you know? You're pretty much Americanized at this point. You know, I lived here for 10 years. You go back, and you go like, okay, yeah, I know what they're saying. I know what, but when I left, there was freedom in the air. When I got back, oh, no, you can't do this. No, you can't do that. You can't, you know, you can't make fun of the government. And I'm like, I come from SNL, TV, you know, all of that, where everybody makes fun of everybody and nobody's shooting anybody because they make fun of them. You know, I go back and I find that's one of the things. Eventually, you see that it's just the way lefties do so. Well, whoever is in power, because it can happen with extreme right, too. So anyways, I was like, as soon as I got there, I'm like, oh, how long is it going to take me to get out of here again? because I remember you and I talked sometime in 2007, 2008 via text, and I wanted to come back.
Yeah.
I didn't want to go back in the first place, but, you know, I needed to stay legally.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to stay here under the table.
Yeah. Well, so, I remember you and I, we were in Newport, Rhode Island. I remember having the conversation, and you were contemplating staying.
Yeah.
And you asked me what I thought of that, and I don't know if you remember what I said, but essentially I told you that you're my friend, I'll support you,
mm-hmm.
and whatever your decision is,
mm-hmm.
I'm certainly not going to tell anyone, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But I told you that if that should ever
occur,
you'll never, ever be able to come back.
Correct.
And that would be way more upsetting to me.
Yeah, and to me, know, yeah.
And to you, of course. So you... I say all that because you did leave the United States,
yeah.
You went back to Venezuela, and
yeah.
you did not have a way to just readily come back here again.
Correct. Yeah, it took me 10 more years to come back.
10 years, yeah.
What was
that process like?
Okay, I mean, for 3 years after, you almost get signed to a label here.
A record label.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a month later, you see yourself down in Venezuela with nothing. I mean, I came from dealing with lawyers. This famous producer. And a month later, I'm like seeing, you know, the building across, you know, the streets where I grew up. And you go like, okay, I'm seeing this street not as a person who accomplished the dream he had set out to go for. But I had to return it because I couldn't do it. So that part mentally destroyed me for a long time.
Mm.
It took about 3 years for me to start doing music again because I remember throwing my circus magazines and everything. I threw them away.
Wow.
I was already starting to think in terms of no music. I mean, let's see if we can change that mm-hmm. mentality of be a normal person, dance to the music, but stay in an office and do office work or something.
Yeah.
I couldn't. I tried. I couldn't. And then I got into a wedding band that we were doing 3 or 4 shows a week. In 9 months, we had 119 shows. So that was great because I was playing music done by others, but it was great, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, I got hired by this pop duo who had Grammys and all that. They're called San Luis. Great, great... opportunity. We toured the continent, and we started in small clubs, and the tour ended in stadiums. I got footage of all that, so it was great. And then I'm like, I archived everything, you know, like newspaper articles, photos, video, all that, because again, my plan was to come here, get a lawyer, and say, this is what I've done, can I get another artist visa? So in 2015, I see the opportunity to come back. I came as a tourist with my tourist visa. So it was legal.
Mm-hmm.
And then a friend of mine goes, like, call this guy. He's a lawyer, immigration lawyer. So I'm like, okay. I called him, send him my stuff. He goes, like, dude, Oscar, this is not good for an artist visa. And I felt like crap. I'm like, wow, all the struggle and all this for what? We're going for the green card. I'm like, okay, you know what to do. I don't know how to do it, so what should I do? You got everything done? Let me just send it. A month and a half later, about 2 months, I get the answer of the green card. I got the green card, so I'm a resident, legal and all, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So time went by, and now I'm a proud American citizen. So all that because of KISS.
Yeah.
Right?
I guess so.
Yeah.
Wow. But that entire process from shortly after our conversation in Newport to the time when you're standing in the hall and swearing your allegiance to the United States.
Oh, this is interesting.
That's 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember I told my girl I have to go for, I didn't know I was going to get the whole, you know, Pledge of Allegiance. None of that. I didn't know that I was going to do that the same day. I just, you have the appointment, the interview to see if you're fit to be a citizen of this country. So I studied the entire thing, learned the main aspects of the U.S. Constitution. That's what I admire about this country. The Constitution has been there for quite a few years. Nobody has changed that. Nobody has touched it. I respect that. Yeah, there's amendments and all that stuff. In my country, Chavez, as soon as he got in, what did he do? Let's change Constitution, and then everything was pretty much fixed to his plan.
Yeah.
So those are the things I compare, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I love Venezuela. I love the Venezuela. I left in 1995 and before 1995, when this guy came to power, that Venezuela died.
Yeah.
And right now, the spirit's still there because if you pay attention to the news right now, they're fighting to get rid of who Chavez put in power,
mm-hmm.
you know, before he passed. He said, you Venezuelans have to vote for Maduro. Well, look at what's going on. You know, like mm-hmm. Maduro's killing people left and right because he didn't win the elections.
Yeah.
So, and another thing that Chavez did, amongst many things, I remember in 2007 or 8, he did this operation of disarmament. Is that the word I want to use? Like, let's get rid of people's guns.
Yeah.
Like, he wanted to, you know, Operation Disarmament or something like that is the name in English. Mm-hmm. Let me just check the actual word. But pretty much, this is what I mean.
Disarmament.
Yeah. Oh, disarmament. Operation Disarmament.
Yeah.
So one of the things that Chavez did in 2007 is the Operation Disarmament, which is I'm going to take the guns from people and I'm going to give it to the ghettos because I give them food, I give them money, I give them drugs, I'm going to give them the guns, and if they want to overthrow me, I'm going to have that militia to protect me, right?
Wow.
So
yeah,
a lot of people gave their guns away. And look at what's happening now. Maduro has all the guns, and people can't defend themselves because they don't have guns.
Wow.
Some people do, but not everyone.
Yeah, sure.
So it's like, I'm not saying that here everybody has a gun, but you can get a gun and just have it for protect your house or something. No, down there, and Chavez would protect the people who would rob your house.
Mm-hmm.
People, because he wanted to give criminals a carte blanche to do whatever they wanted. So in the time of need, he would have them to kill the citizens, and he was still in power, which is what's going on right now.
That's fascinating. I had no idea that.
So that's why I say, you know, it's like there's a lot of people saying that, oh, no, nothing is happening in Venezuela. Like there is an American reporter that I saw with Joe Rogan.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Abby Martin. She's American. I encourage you to go and check that episode where she talks about Venezuela. This is from 5 years ago.
Okay.
That she says, you know, America hates Maduro and they just don't forget. They don't forgive. Nothing like you're seeing in the news here in America is happening in Venezuela. Everybody's happy. Really? I would like to tell her, what do you think about Venezuela now that in less than a month, less than 2 weeks, he's imprisoned 2,000 people, protesters, and it's about 200 deaths. And now he's not attacking the middle and upper class. He's attacking the people he gave the guns to because they went to protest
mm-hmm.
to get him out of government because he committed fraud, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what or Roger Waters, who I mean, Pink Floyd. We're talking about Pink Floyd here.
Yeah.
You know, we're not talking about your neighbor's band, Pink
mm-hmm.
Floyd.
Yeah.
Final Cut, Animals, Dark Side of the Moon. You have this guy saying, nothing is going on in Venezuela. Leave Venezuela alone. Really?
Mm.
Have you checked what's coming out of Venezuela that comes here? You know, Maduro and Chavez did what Pablo Escobar wanted to do, which is stay in power. Pablo went for politics. But the Colombian government found out and they, you know, kept him from becoming the president of the country
mm-hmm.
because otherwise it would have been what Venezuela is now. Chavez, oh, this is another thing that I remember, but I was already there, I guess, or it was probably a few years before I returned to Venezuela. He got rid of the DEA in Venezuela.
Mm.
He kicked them out. And I'm like, I wonder why. Well, go and check online how much coke goes through Venezuela now, you know, and then few people who got caught, big drug dealers, were released by the government here, which I don't understand how that happened, but, you know, there was an exchange.
Yeah.
That's another thing Maduro learned from Fidel, you know, kidnap or, you know, catch some American citizens who are in Venezuela, keep them as hostages, and then use them as a bargaining or negotiation chip or whatever. So all that is happening right now.
So do you still have family that lives there, though, I would imagine? Yeah. Do you have any siblings?
I do. I have four brothers on my dad's side.
Really?
Yeah. And, you know, they're okay.
Yeah.
I do have some family there, you know.
Are any of them musical?
None.
Nobody.
Probably they saw how much I struggled and how much... It's not an easy business, dude. Had I known that things were going to be this hard in terms of how the music business is today, I wonder. Probably I wouldn't have gone for it. Because, you know, I mean, when you're a kid, you see Kiss and you see all that and you go like, if I work hard, the only thing you need to do is work hard. You know, study hard, work hard, and you'll do it. Well, yeah, that's if you want to be a lawyer or a doctor or something. There's, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But in the music industry, if you talk to somebody, they don't get back to you. And whoever are the gatekeepers, they really, I mean, if you go to them, it's almost like saying, oh, if you came to me, that means that you're not good. So I'm not going to pay attention to you. I'm just going to sign who I'm chasing, not who comes to me. You know, do I explain myself?
Yeah, I think so.
It's interesting because it's not so much what you know is who you know. Who you know, you knock on their door and they don't open it, you go like, okay.
Mm-hmm. It is very similar, I think, in the, you know, many, many children growing up, their idol is, you know, Tom Brady or some sports figure.
Yeah, correct.
And most kids, boys and girls, they're put into T-ball and Little League and Pop Warner football and et cetera, et cetera. I, from my own personal experience, I was athletic, but I was never really very good at sports. But I had one particular friend who was a tremendous hockey player, and like he was, I thought, you know, growing up with him that he's absolutely going to be in the NHL. He's that good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you live in this little fish pond in the world, you know, and there's this big ocean all around you, and when you get older, you realize. There's a lot of really talented people in the world, but it's very, very, very few of those people ever reach the highest tier, you know? So I don't know that I wouldn't change anything that I've attempted in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. I had that same dream when I was a little boy with the records and imagining someday I'm going to have a record. I'm going to be on that stage. And then at some point you realize it just wasn't in the cards. Doesn't mean that I'm ever going to... I live and breathe music. It's inside of me in a way that I can't... You understand it. Other musicians understand it. Lots of people don't understand that it's something that you never stop doing, you know?
Yeah, I've tried to quit a few times.
So have I.
Yeah, and no. Yeah. So I wouldn't say it's like a curse for sure, but it kind of is.
Feels that way sometimes, yeah.
You know?
It does.
You accept being a vampire. There's nothing else you can do. You know, you accept it. And, you know, it'll end when we pass. When we pass, it'll be over. So it's like, all right, there's nothing else we can do. It is what it is. Let me tell you, if I could quit, I would. You know, I would become, I don't know, a butcher or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't found that emotional, spiritual attachment with anything else.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's like, that's what gives life meaning, at least to me.
Mm-hmm. So when you were at Berklee, you spent 4 years there.
Five,
okay. Graduated.
Yeah.
I've met a lot of Berklee folks in my lifetime. I am certainly not one of them. However,
Bowie wasn't either, so don't worry.
Yeah, well, that's sort of
Peter Gabriel. So
sort of to my point is, it's a great institution. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of very talented people that have gone there, and some folks sort of lose it's been my experience in a way. I shouldn't speak for other people, but they lose a part of the soulfulness in music by quote unquote learning, being taught in that way. And I'd forgive me anyone listening that doesn't agree with that. It's certainly okay. But what was your takeaway from Berklee? That was a very long winded question. Sorry.
No, it's fine.
What were the best things that you took away from it? And what were the things that you could have done without?
Well, the reading part, I learned how to read, I wouldn't say on my own. There was a drum teacher I had in Venezuela who taught me 16 notes and whole notes and all that, and the measurement and all that. But there is another method of pretty much reading whatever they throw at you that, you know, they teach you at Berklee all the possibilities in harmony, how notes interact with another note, you know? However, remember what I said, that I was chasing my friend Leo. I early on knew that I couldn't stay in America without a visa or without a reason. If I went to an immigration lawyer saying, not an immigration lawyer, an immigration, you know, the ones in customs and at the airports, I came here because I want to be the Latin Bon Jovi. I don't think they would let me in, you know? You know, so I needed to have a good excuse, and it was going to school. So I wasn't going to go to school to become a physicist or a doctor or what have you. So I'm like, okay, I'm going to use something that I love, and I'm going to learn about it. The good thing about one of the many things about Berklee was it opens the world in a way that you see all the, a lot of styles, a lot of things that are going on in the world besides Van Halen. You know, you learn a lot of culture and a lot of, you know, a lot of people from other countries, which, you know, all that is phenomenal. You learn about the business. Again, when I graduated, MP3 were new. So right now it's just, they exist, but they're not the new thing anymore. So it's been a while. So nowadays you got some big folks like artists who barely know where middle C is in the keyboard. I learned a little bit of composition. I learned a little bit of songwriting. I learned a little bit of orchestration. I could get more refined and proficient at my instrument, not KISS only. You know, I'm not saying that KISS doesn't have its thing. It does, but it broadened my you know, it's definitely that the spectrum, it just made it a lot wider. In terms of soul, if you lose a soul as a musician, it is annoying to do homework. You have to follow patterns, but that's how you learn techniques. That's how you learn, you know, what rules to break. You know, I remember counterpoint, you know, you were doing it the way Bach did. So you had to know parallel fifths, and you needed to know what a fifth is, first of all. I find it very, very nurturing, let's say. Like, I learned so much that whatever I hear in my head now, I can pretty much write down without the instrument. I go, okay, great. I wouldn't have been able probably to do that had I stayed at home dreaming about being Peter Criss or KISS.
Yeah.
And then the other thing is that they teach you, or they taught you, how the business worked back then. I would never learn that in Venezuela whatsoever, because Venezuela, you, if you have a salsa band, you just get gigs and that's it.
Yeah.
They pay you for the night. They give you food, drinks. And then you go home and do it all over again the following night. Here is an industry. I mean, there's rights that you want to know about. Copyright, composition, you know, all the, what do I want to say? The publishing rights, all the law side of the industry. You learn here. You don't learn it there. And I didn't want to learn it there because it would apply only to that country. And remember, I wanted to be the Latin Bon Jovi. So I needed to come from a country where people in Venezuela would go like, oh, they're in America. We have to go there and see him. So to be in America, you needed to know first the language, how things were done, put everything together, and then bring it all over the world. Or, you know, that was the goal, the initial goal. I learned a lot. For example, when you're under pressure, either you learn that in the studio because you're so good that everybody wants to record with you, and there's a lot of studios around in the city. But in Boston, back then, yeah, there were studios, but you were at school, so they would, you know, give you a lead sheet. All right, we're going to record now. So they would give you experience, or they would give you, like, examples on how the real musician, you know, how the world worked here.
Mm-hmm.
So all that was, I mean, I don't change the Berklee days. I mean, it was very, very interesting, very, again, nurturing, because I thought that you had, you know, the triads, and that was it.
Yeah.
You know, like...
Well, you must have been pretty darn good to get a scholarship to get into Berklee to begin with, so I applaud you for, you know, teaching yourself how to do that at such a young age and taking instruction wherever you could get it, and
yeah,
you know, probably you hear...
It's a drive.
I would imagine... Well, I have a couple of questions. Like, for instance, I'm curious, why wouldn't you maybe go to Nashville or a place like that where you could be a session guy? Okay. I've seen you play. I've actually played music with you a few times, and certainly have seen you play the drums and listen to it. You did some recording with me, and your process, the simplest of pop, common time, four on the floor kind of music, and yet you still, you know, you notated the drum parts, and I had never worked with anyone that did that. They just sort of like, here's the song, Oscar. Do what you want to do with it. I trust you. But you were, it was more than that. It was a much more meticulous process.
Yeah, I remember those sessions. It was like, what, like a two-day session?
Yeah, we were working on that children's record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was probably at the very end when I was leaving back to Venezuela. I was writing the sheets so I would get the form of the songs, like where to do a fill before a chorus or something. So I didn't have to listen to the song 30 times to memorize it.
Yeah.
I would just write, okay, four bars of this pattern, you know, fill, chorus. That's what they teach you at Berklee. Back then, remember, there wasn't any internet.
Yeah.
So you had to learn it somewhere, and I did learn it at Berklee. So it's like that, I mean, you learn that because you want to make sure that you're not going to be a problem in the studio when they see that you're taking 4 hours to record a song. You want to do it as fast as possible, the best you can, so they call you back and you start developing your, or getting your name out there. Oh, this guy works great. And
yeah.
I had a couple of sessions like that, and they're great. Nashville. I already have my people here in Boston, and I was afraid of going to Nashville, for example, with little money back then, because I didn't have a lot of money. Where was I going to stay? If I was from America, I wouldn't have much to lose because, you know, I would go back to Massachusetts and that's it. But if I got, you know, it was, I'm remembering, because I kind of like thought about doing that, and I'm like, okay, where are you going to stay? How much are you going to pay? Most likely, you're not going to get jobs the first day you're there. You get, because everything has been a struggle in my life. You're going to struggle.
Yeah.
So what are you going to do while you get your first session? All that I thought about. And I'm like, and back then I was already getting a taste of the world, that it wasn't just wanting to be in KISS and that was it.
I mean,
real life, I learned real life here. So it's like, okay, I mean, if I had the money, yes, I will go to Nashville, probably L.A. or even New York.
Yeah.
But all those places are very expensive, and the moving, taking my drum set there. And again, I didn't know anybody there. So if I had an in the industry, somebody who said, come here, you can sleep on my couch until you, okay. But no, it wasn't like that.
Yeah.
I would have probably done it, but I knocked on doors that never opened, and you know, it is what it is.
Yeah.
I forgot the doors, actually, now at this point, what doors I knocked on. And
yeah,
you know.
Well, maybe you should have. I think both of us probably could have. We should have kicked a few more doors in when they didn't open.
Well, I mean, the reason why I'm still doing it is because you never know. Again, everything's struggle, and I'm a little superstitious also. So you never know if the day you quit, you were meant to knock on the door, that was going to be it.
Yeah.
And I've been in situations like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, okay, I mean, what's stronger, your drive or the anxiety of not making it? And I'm like, I've been without making it for a long time, and it hasn't killed me. So how about just doing it because you love it? And do it to the best, you know, quality work.
Yeah.
Do it up to your standards. So right now my band is working with this multi-platinum producer. His name is Bob St. John. He's done Duran Duran, Steven Tyler, C. Perry, Collective Soul, Extreme. Hmm. So we're sounding great. But again, there's no label. So I have to work, save money to advance.
Yeah.
But it's the way it is. I mean.
So what's the name of the band?
Okay, this is very interesting because I was tired of coming up with names that were already taken and I didn't think they were. But they were. For example, one of the first names was Red Monkey, and I realized it was a band, a punk band. I'm like, okay, and like that many. So I'm like, what kind of name can I come up with? How about just making up a word? Van Halen, if it wasn't a last name, it would be just the band, Van Halen.
Mm-hmm.
Bon Jovi, it would be Bon Jovi. Balsa, my last name is not that attractive. They can say many things, you know, Balsov, Balsack.
Mm.
No. Like Hootie and the Blowjob. I heard that from a friend. Oh, so you like Hootie and the Blowjob? And I'm like, okay, that's a name that I'm not going to do. So I'm like, okay. So I came up with this name, Sionico, which doesn't mean anything but my universe, my band. If you go online and you type Sionico, C-I-O-N-I-C-O, you're just going to see my band. You're not going to see anything else. And I'm like, that's a win. I mean, if you have the right channels, people can remember the name, but they have to see it more than once, way
yeah.
more than once. But if they see it enough, they're going to remember it because there's no other band like that name. You know, Nike, how many times did they have to go do advertisements so people remember it? And they had the little, you know,
the swoosh.
The yeah. swoosh. It's like, okay, I'm going to have my own swoosh, which is going to be a jellyfish. That's the sign of my band.
Hmm.
That's the name. What's that? That's a Sionico. And what's Sionico? A band. But what does it mean? It's the name of a band. But does it come from somewhere? Yeah, it's a band. That's my argument. It's a band.
Yeah.
You know,
I love it. That's a great idea.
And then it's got a little jellyfish because it symbolizes the way I was when I was in Venezuela. I didn't know where to go. And, you know, the jellyfish goes with the, you know, the water takes it.
Yeah.
And you have those jellyfish who have the long tentacles that if you touch them, they f*** you up.
Yeah.
All that. I wanted to play with that. It's like I needed something out of the abstract, some not shaped,
yeah.
not predetermined. Because that's the Star Wars universe I talked about. I wanted to create that universe. It's a way of escaping the reality
yeah.
I was in. So, Sionico. That's it.
Sionico.
Let's just go with this, and that's it. And right. here we are.
That's great. So, what is Sionico up to these days?
Okay, we're recording our first English EP. We have three songs out. No, two. We have another one being mastered as we speak. Let me tell you, we used to have a different singer, and this singer was good. He was good. He only wanted to do Spanish stuff. And again, Kiss is not Spanish. Kiss is English show. So I am thinking, all right, Sionico is my universe. How about just doing both English and Spanish? That's how I conceived the whole thing. You have artists who have done it very nicely. Gloria Estefan, Julio Iglesias, Ricky Martin, Shakira. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm.
I learned how to write songs in English, so how about just going that way? But that singer didn't want to do it in English. But we are playing in America, dude. English and Spanish should be the same thing in our minds at this point because we speak both. We learned one from when we were kids, and the other one we learned to be part of the community here.
Mm-hmm.
And to be understood and to be heard and, you know, in our bands, in my case, Queen, it's in English. So it's like, we're going to do it in English. And the singer didn't want to do it. So I had a person in mind by the name of Leo, who was a guy who I met in 88, who left and then came back to be part of this band. And I'm like, okay, I know who can do this. So I called him, and he goes like, yeah, let's give it a try. So I sent him one of the songs, which is one of the songs I sent you a long time ago, sung by me. There's a reason why I'm a drummer, you know? So anyways, the guy sent it to me, and I'm like, oh, this is so killer. So I was like, okay, I need to move my butt. I need to start generating content, as they say now, and do the English stuff. So I called the guys and said, all right, this is in December last year. We're going to film the video next year for the first song in English, and we're going to do a 5-song EP. One song of that EP is one of the songs that we used to get almost signed in 2025. Wow, I'm too ahead of my time, 2005. So what's up now? We're going to finish this third single of this 5-song EP. We're going to finish the other two. We just got to do the vocals. We're going to release the EP, start getting shows. And the second album hopefully will come out sometime in 2025. Drums are already recorded because I recorded them the way you just said. I had a few hours. I mean, it took me 8 hours to record 10 songs. But it's like, okay, you haven't done this in a long time. You haven't played drums to lead sheets in a long time, Oscar. So start ahead. You know, start before the session, learn the songs. Wrote the parts. That's what I did. At the time, I went to the studio in Florida, Bob St. John's studio. I recorded the stuff in 8 hours, and I still had like probably like 10 hours left. I called Leo. Leo, I guess this is the time that we can record that song we talked about, remember? How about coming to the studio and recording it? And that's how it happened. That's the first single. The video organically has gotten what? 17,000, more than 17,000 plays, whereas anything else that we've done before hasn't gotten there organically. Nothing. I mean, we were in few charts, independent charts in South America, number one, number five, top 10. Yeah, the plan is to release the EP, do shows in English, maybe one or two covers. I'm still trying to convince the guys to do some Kiss just to honor the beginning of it all.
Yeah.
We'll see. The second album sometime next year. I mean, that's the plan. And again, I cannot stop. I wish I could, but I can't. So there's going to be more music. It doesn't matter how good or bad it is.
Well, why don't we wrap it up there?
Sure. Get rid of my accent with some auto-tune or something.
We're going to use...
Can you make me sound...
auto-tune.
Like if I was a country artist.
Sure, I can. All right.
Like Share and Believe.
I'll just overdub my voice in place of yours, everyone will be very confused.
Yeah, it was beautiful. Thank you for this.
You've been listening to Beautiful Minds, an exploration into the minds of creative people and what makes them tick. This program is a production of Audio Journal, a proud member of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network. Please remember, we'd love to hear from you. Are there any local musicians or artists that you'd like to hear from? Call or email us with any suggestions or general feedback. Please call 508-797-1117 or email us at info@audiojournal.org. And before I sign off, I'd just like to say, I'm grateful for the universe and for whatever put us all here. And I'm grateful for all of the gifts that it's given me. And most of all, I'm grateful for you being here with me today. Have a great day.
People with disabilities adapt on a daily basis. They're people you want on your team. And at the Mass Commission for the Blind, we're here to help you find blind and visually impaired professionals to help you reach your organizational goals. Call 1-800-400-8 392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB to learn how you can become an employer partner for the blindness community. That's 1-800-392-6450 or visit mass.gov/MCB.